Toucher.
Oh my God.
And Rich.
Are you kidding me?
Toucher and Rich.
Embarrassing to America.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich, and the combine is over. Drew Rosenhaus, the agent of Rob Gronkowski, was on PFT Live. That's Pro Football Talk Live, by the way. 617-779-0985. He declined to comment on whether the Patriots have asked for a decision by a certain date, and he has said that he will not commit. He has declined to commit to say if Gronkowski has committed to another season of football. And he says that he still hasn't made that commitment. So is this concerning anyone at this point? That Rob Gronkowski, his agent won't say anything. He hasn't given the Patriots any kind of information. I guess on March 14th, the Patriots owed tight end Martellus Bennett a $2 million roster bonus that same day. At what point does this become an issue? Because it's getting there for the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots are going to have to start making moves. And Rob Gronkowski still has not committed.
Well, I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you answered this when I talked to you about this last week, Fred, but is Rob Gronkowski one of those players you make an exception for? Patriots have been hard line on salaries ever since Belichick took over, and it's worked for him. But is Gronkowski one of those guys that you change rules for? Patriots won a Super Bowl without him. You know, they've shown a willingness to, you know, sit him out if need be to get him completely healthy and play without him, and it's worked.
Okay, what's the exception, though? I mean, in terms of, like, reworking his contract?
Yeah.
Okay, but what if he doesn't want to come to the table right away? What if he wants to continue to think these things out? Do you make an exception and kind of hold everything And let time go by and have to make business decisions or hold off on business decisions?
Honestly, I think the Patriots don't see him as one of those guys, and I think they'll wait until free agency. And they'll decline that option on Martellus Bennett because that's a big contract, and they'll go into free agency and try and find another guy. That I think the Patriots will hold off answering or making a decision on this until March 12th, which I guess is the legal tampering period. So they'll go into free agency. They'll try and find a tight end.
Oh, okay, until March 12th.
Yes, then at least another week.
Okay, so you get concerned in another week.
Yes. That's a roundabout way of me answering your question.
All right, so you'd be concerned soon.
Yes.
Not in a lot of time, because today is the
5th.
Today is the 5th.
Yes.
All right, so you're saying that we have, like a week.
Yeah.
Before you get concerned.
Another week before.
Nary a week.
That's right.
I don't care anything about what the agent says. I truly don't. Because I'm not going to believe him one way or the other. And he's going to say whatever he thinks he needs to say in order to get the most money for his client.
Sure.
And the best deal going forward. So I pretty much dismiss what the agent says. The thing that concerned me was Tommy Curran's report last week. How he talked about how this started at the beginning of camp last year.
Right.
And how this is how they treat guys. I don't know if this was part of Tom's report or this is just comments after the fact, but the way they were treating Gronkowski at the beginning of camp last year and the way he was made to feel, he said, that's how they treat guys when they're going to get rid of them. That's how they treat guys when they're going to trade them or they're going to move on from them in some way, shape, or form. They don't do that to guys that they're in love with and they want to keep around at all costs. And it doesn't sound, at least according to Curran's report, that he was happy all of last year. It started in camp. It continued on with the Guerrero stuff and him not being able to train the way he wanted to train. And if he's just not in a good place, in a good headspace there, and he's thinking that, you know what, on top of this and the injury, for him, leaving football might be on the table, but the worst-case scenario for the Patriots is he might just want to play somewhere else.
And you know what else is scary about this is that generally it's leading up to camp or like right when camp starts where players go, I just don't want to do this anymore. That's what Ninkovich went through. That's, you know, players just you know, when it gets time for camp and then they realize they have to go through all that crap, they start bagging out. And this has been going on since February. So, and if he was indeed mistreated or he wasn't treated like a superstar in camp last year and they didn't let him play by a different set of rules, I mean, everyone's saying that they haven't heard anything about him retiring, that no one thinks he's actually going to retire, and I still say...
Yeah, Rappaport had that last week, that he expects that his sources expect Gronk to play for the Patriots next season.
Yeah, but that's like saying nothing. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like,
but in a world that's devoid of actual facts, I mean, what else do you have to go on?
Opinion. I mean, who did he talk to? His sources.
I don't know.
He probably talked to someone at the Patriots, and they said, yeah, we expect him to come back. I mean, who's going to, you know, you'd have to talk to someone directly involved with his family. Like, someone's going to go. And what interest is it to Rob Gronkowski to go, like, nah, I'm not coming back? You're not going to get that information. You're only going to get information that everyone's expecting him to come back. And it's so funny because it's so alien to people why you wouldn't want to play football. Because everyone thinks, oh, I'm a big football star and this is what I want to do. You go through all those surgeries, and you go through all that crap, and then you have to go through camp, and then you have to, and you are able to get paid money for things that you really want to do outside of football, and you have to put a hold on that every summer. I truly believe, I think that if he does come back, it's just something he feels he has to do. I think if you gave him a lie detector test and you said, do you want to go back to football, or would you rather do something else? It would definitely be he wants to do something else.
Just if you could talk to him, though, and, like, you know, like, hear him out, and it's like, let's say he came to you and said, you know, Fred, you know, what do you think I should do? If I'm in that position, I'm listening to him, and he's talking about one of the things you just mentioned, like, I got to put on hold all these other things I want to do, I would tell him, I understand that, but know this, nothing you do after football is going to equal or eclipse what you're doing on the field and what you're doing with the Patriots.
Okay,
this but- is this is it. And making movies, you're going to make a lot of money, and being in the wrestling ring, that's going to be a lot of fun for a while, and then that'll be a job too, and it's going to might earn you some money, but you know what you're doing out of the, even though it's a game, it's still real. It's something that people sit around and talk about for hours,
okay,
weeks at a time. It's something tangible. You can say, "Yes, I did that." Don't brush that aside.
Okay, I would counter with this. I would say you've done everything that is possible in a career. You are a player who's suffered through chronic severe injuries. Life gets a lot less fun the more longer at post football, the longer you play. And also you've built this image and you've built this brand that gets a lot less cute the older you get. So if you strike now, you still have all your wits about you. You're still in good enough physical condition where you can go out and do these things. You've done everything that you can do on a football field. I mean, you've won a Super Bowl. You're considered the greatest tight end of all time.
Is he? Without question, is he the greatest tight end to ever play the game? That's still up for debate.
Who would you have ahead of him?
Tony Gonzalez is up there.
Well, that's longevity.
But that's part of it. That's still part of the that's part of the equation.
Okay, then I would ask you this. If you could have any tight end in the history of football for a season, who would you have? I'll give you this. Who's a better running back, Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith?
Barry Sanders.
Yeah. And Barry Sanders played a lot less than...
But is Barry Sanders considered the greatest running back of all time?
For anyone with a brain.
Yeah, but a lot of people will say no. They'll go with Peyton.
A lot of people go Jim Brown, Walter Payton.
Right, they'll go with guys who played
longer. Well, Jim Brown didn't play. Jim Brown played less than Barry Sanders.
Yes, he did. That's true.
Touché.
All right, then Walter Payton.
Maybe you come and do a little research before you come and get when you get in the ring with the big boys.
Put on the running back cap. Right.
Yeah, maybe you pull up on your Twitter machine over there what I'm talking about.
But Barry Sanders is a good example. He is not an across-the-board favorite as the greatest running back of all time.
Okay,
he didn't play long enough.
Who would you put ahead of him, though?
O.J. Simpson. I don't know. Pick a guy. There's all kinds of people out there where people will pick.
No one would say O.J. Simpson. Guy's a murderer.
But they're
if you go Jim Brown, that's a bad argument because he played less years than Barry Sanders.
Okay, but there are enough guys out there that will say things like dumb things, admittedly, like Emmitt Smith.
Well, then
just
what are
because
you
he
do?
Played for a long
well,
time.
Well, then what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do about that.
I'm saying that the things that you take for granted, it's like he's the greatest of all time. He's done everything he wanted to. I don't know. He's got two rings, but he only really earned one of them.
All right, but then what okay, so at the end of the day, you keep doing something that you don't want to do and risk ruining your life because there's going to be a debate if you were the best of all time?
It depends on what you're looking for. You know, you talk about, you know, cashing in on his brand right now. To me, that brand is valuable, sure, but is that what you want to be remembered for? Do you think you're going to be remembered for the brand Rob Gronkowski? I don't think so. I think you're going to be remembered as the football player first, and everything you do after football is going to be secondary.
You don't know that. Depends. He could segue from wrestling to being an actor. He could go win an Academy Award.
Absolutely. I mean, he's going to be the next Gary Oldman.
I'm telling you, he could be a great character actor. He's got a wide range of emotions.
Yes.
I think you're selling him short.
And the cartoon short is just a guy's eyes bugging out when they see boobs.
That's right.
It's T&R, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter, at Kutcher and Rich.
I will pay for the legal fees.
The Sports Hub, we are at Kutcher and Rich, and I just had a conversation with Hardy off the air. And I was saying, have you seen Zoloft's commercial for the diet thing that he does? And it's on TV. I think it played like right before the Oscars, if not during the Oscars. I saw I didn't see the Oscars, so it must have been right before it. And you know, he's there. He's got the sunglasses around the neck, so I'm assuming they made him take them off. Like he did a couple takes with them off, with them on, and they were like, take them off. But then popping out of nowhere with no dialogue, and you know he didn't get paid, is Sarge.
Doing what?
Shaking a guy's hand.
Really?
Yeah. Like so Zolak's talking to the camera, and he's doing a fine job.
Yep.
And then while he's talking, they go to another shot, and it's Sarge sitting there shaking someone's hand, and you know, and you can even tell it's Sarge beyond even if you didn't see his face, because it's like, I'm Sarge. You can tell it. And now you blame me, Hardy, for the fact that Sarge is in the consciousness.
I say you're partially to blame, yes.
And you're saying that this is a negative.
I'm saying that the Sarge brand, if you have a problem with it just being a thing in life, that...
Which you do.
I do not.
Yes, well, of course you do, because you say, I blame you. That doesn't mean, like, oh, hey, what a fantastic
blame slash credit.
No,
I credit you for turning the Sarge brand into a thing.
Backpedaling, don't hurt yourself.
No, you said that you blame me.
I don't like this gotcha radio.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something I say off the air.
I don't want
to
turn
when
this
I
off.
Say to you, I blame you for Sarge, you turn that into a thing. I credit you for Sarge.
I don't want to make it toxic here. But no, you meant blame. And this has been talked about on the air before with other people.
Right. We don't want to repeat
like,
anything.
What are you afraid of?
Incurring the wrath of Sarge.
Okay, listen. Just offer him, just offer him a little bit of airtime, and he'll do it. Because
perhaps he's on a poo-poo platter.
That's right.
Get back in his good
graces.
Well,
you went to Kowloon with them.
I was up there for one of their big meetups, and then I went to a game with Andy Wong and Sarge and Jay Stu.
Oh, that was a Patriots game. That was a Patriots game.
We went to the Titans. No, not the Titans. We went to...
The Super Bowl.
God, we went to the AFC Championship, I think.
Okay, so part of the reason that... Because Bertrand and Zoe and Bertrand, especially Zoe, not so much Bertrand, I don't think. But Zolak is passionate about Hardy not filling in for our show. And a lot of that reason, I've been told by Zolak, is because often Sarge will be third mic on that show.
I don't think it has anything to do with...
He's told me so.
With Sarge being the guy, it just disrupts the flow of
no,
the show.
No, I understand, because you're an important piece of that show. I understand that.
How would you like it if they pulled Wallach off, you know,
loaded question and a half? I don't know if I want that answer.
Every couple of weeks, because they needed him on another show.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'd do.
Yeah. It would crush him, Hardy, if I wasn't on the program.
I'd have to find someone else to step on the jokes. But
thanks, Hardy.
But you're an integral part of that show. But I've been told that despite Sarge coming in and doing headlines, that pisses Zolak off.
I don't think it's a Sarge thing. I think it's just a changing the show thing.
Okay, so you're taking the credit. You're saying that you're so valuable that it has nothing to do.
Of course.
Because
look at me.
Zolak has told me that he doesn't like it when
Well, then what are you asking me for? If that's it, if that's factual.
Because this is all part of the story that you blame me for Sarge.
And credit
the,
you.
All right, someone's calling in on the phone. Is Bird there? You're crediting me for the thing.
Sarge calling in. He wants to be part of this conversation.
For creating right. the Sarge mystique.
All right. Scott, hello.
Hi.
Do you like Sarge?
Yeah, I like Sarge.
How was doing the commercial shoot with him?
I was a little surprised he was there when I walked in.
Was he supposed to be?
Was he supposed to be there?
They did not give me the heads up on that.
Okay. Did he, in your...
did he give them the heads up on that?
That's a great question. I don't think so.
Okay. Was he compensated for doing that commercial?
Hell no.
Okay. So you're telling me that Sarge went to your commercials shoot, which, right. by the way, I think you did a terrific job.
It was okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. So Sarge went to your commercial shoot with no one knowing and did not get compensated.
Oddly enough, I mean, he shows up at several of my things, unannounced.
And not compensated?
Hell no.
Now, how did he finagle himself onto the television?
I just think they didn't know what to do with him. it's not a big place inside, so if you're there, you're getting in the shoot. You know what I mean? I mean, you're going to be in the background.
That's nice.
So when you got in there, he was like, hey, Scott?
No, he gives me, the wink and that, hey, gotcha, and, shoots me the guns. And, hey, Mike.
All right.
I haven't seen you in a while, buddy.
Do you blame this show for being...
Why is him again today? Is he here today?
I don't know.
Well, you seem to really like him.
I don't know, they're planning another show without Hardy.
Okay, listen, I credit Sarge for this more than anything, because you know me. I'm a 9-to-5er nickel and dimer, as Fred Touch would say, ham and egger. I'm a worker bee, and so is Sarge. When there's a last-minute fill-in that's needed, Sarge is there, and he's bailed me out on more than one occasion, and I appreciate that.
And I do think Sarge's greatest attribute is that he literally wants to kill cattle.
Really? Now, why is that?
I don't know. I think the versatility factor, I think Sarge, I don't know. I'm not getting into this one.
Well, you just brought it up.
He's just leaving that landmine, walking away.
You're right. This is all Fred's fault.
With the Sarge thing.
It's exploded, man. I mean,
okay, so if you're blaming me for Sarge.
Fred wants to know what the problem is. What's the problem with Sarge being a thing?
It's not a problem. I don't know if it's the overexposure or if it's... Hardy, you're right. I don't know how to term it. It's not negative.
Yes, it absolutely is negative.
All right, I'm going to go. I got to go.
Okay. Bye, Zo.
All right, why does Sarge hate Nick Cattles?
I don't know that.
He has to get in line.
I don't know that like to Nick. Be the case.
Okay. I've broken bread with Cattles.
Yes. And you said, how was the experience?
When Nick was looking for another job before I was counseling him, he was giving me tapes and stuff. And then when he was in Virginia Beach, he would send me tapes. And oh boy, were they bad. No, I'm just kidding. But he would send me tapes. So I have a relationship with Nick. Very angry young man, but I do have a relationship with Nick.
Good.
I don't know why he would have, why Sarge is, so does Nick hate Sarge or does Sarge hate Nick?
I don't know if either one of them hates the other. Okay. That's news to me.
All right.
I didn't think Sarge hated anybody.
I would get that impression as well.
Well.
How is it spending time with him off air?
Sarge?
Yeah.
He spends a lot of time on his phone. You know, it's if he's not documenting it on social media, then it's either A, didn't happen, or B, it's not worth doing.
Okay.
You know, so that can be exhausting. And somebody, and when we went to that game, he went over to Dan Roach because we were there at the CBS scene and we're going to eat there before we go into the stadium. And says, Dan Roach, hey, Sarge, salute of the day if you allow me to use your charger there and juice me up a little bit. Can you juice me up a little bit there, Dan? And fine. So Dan Roach takes Sarge's phone and he plugs it in. Bloom, says, Sarge, you're at 98%.
I want a full 100. Want a full 100%.
Okay.
So by the end of the game, he was out of battery.
Oh my God.
So much time on his phone.
How's that possible?
He killed the battery before the end of the game.
Four hours. That's amazing.
It's exhausting to be around.
Wow.
All right. Well, it sounds like you really like him.
I do like him, but just the pictures and the tweeting in here. Look at this. And can we do a selfie? Which, how about if we watch the football contest happening in front of us that determines who goes on to the Super Bowl? Can we do that?
Joe Haggerty is going to join us. He hopefully can get us up to speed with all the injuries that are going on. Here are the headlines.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We are Toucher and Rich, your Boston Bruins. Second most points in all of the Eastern Conference. Three games in hand on Tampa Bay. 6 points behind them. They have 4 games in hand again at Toronto, and they're 3 points ahead of them. So things are looking good. Obviously, this is a playoff team, but they're a little concerning. There are some injuries. And Joe Haggerty from NBC Sports Boston joins us. Hello, Mr. Joe Haggerty.
What's up, Mr. Freddie T? How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you so much. All right. First of all, when you heard about Bergeron's injury and what it was and that they were reevaluating it in 2 weeks, what was your impression on a timeline? Did you have one?
Yeah, that he wasn't going to be back in 2 weeks. I think I would expect it. I mean, what I take from that is, there's probably going to be some kind of scan, and they'll take a look at it a few weeks in to see how it's healing, and that will give them a better idea of how quickly, he's going to be back. I don't expect that he's going to be back in a couple weeks. I mean, he was still just on crutches the other day when we saw him at the Garden. So I would think it's probably more like 3 or 4 weeks until he comes back. That's probably a little bit more reasonable. And given, as you just mentioned, their place in the standings, they've got a huge playoff cushion. They're in no danger of really losing home ice in the first round or, falling out of the playoffs. That, there's really no rush here. I think the two big things you lose out on with the Bergeron injury here, because I think he is going to be able to come back with some time to get ready for the playoffs, is, it kind of eliminates him from the Hart Trophy conversation, which is too bad because, he was in it and he was having his best NHL season and it would have been a lot of credit due for a player that's deserved it over the course of a brilliant NHL career. And the other part of it is I think they're going to be really hard-pressed to catch the Tampa Bay Lightning 6 points behind with 3 games in hand, 3 games against them. They could certainly do it. But I think missing Bergeron for a significant amount of time, and you add Charlie McAvoy, who went down last weekend, to that as well, I think they're going to have a real hard time catching the Lightning. So they won't be the top seed. But it looks like, at this point, they're in a pretty good spot, so it's not the worst thing in the world to get the injury out of the way and get them ready for the playoffs.
All right, so you're saying they'd be extra cautious with Bergeron based on where they are?
Oh, yeah. There's no reason to rush him. I think they certainly would be. He's going to want to come back as soon as he can, but I think he was also very clear, and I think the Bruins were too, that he's going to be 100% when he comes back. He's not going to rush it. So I would expect that he's going to be ready to ramp it up, with a week or two to go, maybe a little bit more than that to go into the playoffs. But, you're not going to see him back next week, I don't think.
All right, with McAvoy, for people who didn't see it, can you kind of describe what happened and your read on it?
Yeah, a little weird. There are a couple of things that happened. Everybody first gravitated towards, myself included, an incident that happened with Brendan Gallagher on the ice where one angle looked like he got slashed in the top of the foot. He took the reverse angle, and the slash was missed by Gallagher, but it still looked like he was tripped up with that right foot, and he kind of fell down and went off quickly afterwards. So he thought, okay, that's where the injury was or where it was caused. But you look at the full shift, and it looked like there was a weird sort of tumble by the boards right before that where it could have been possibly a knee instead of a foot or an ankle or anything like that. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it was. I will say this. He went off immediately, so he knew something was wrong. And the fact of the Bruins, the word came from them very quickly afterwards that he was not returning to the game, set off warning bells and whistles in my head that it was pretty serious. Usually if you know that quickly that a player's not coming back at this point, and it's a tough kid like Charlie McAvoy, it may be something significant that you're dealing with as far as a lower body injury goes. You know, we'll have to wait and see, but that was not a good immediate first sign that they knew quickly he wasn't going to come back in that game on Saturday.
So in the interim, it looks like Brandon Carlo, we were discussing this earlier in the show, it looks like Brandon Carlo is going to rejoin Zdeno Chara in the first D pairing. How comfortable are you with that?
I'm comfortable. They looked good last year. You know, I've been a real big proponent of trying to find somebody on the left side that can play with McAvoy, that's maybe a little bit more of a puck mover and a little bit more mobile. So you could go back to putting Carlo and Char together as a true shutdown pair where, you know, they can just really focus on shutting down the other team's best offensive players and kind of simplify their game. You know, obviously it would, you know, be pretty good for Charlie to be in that role, and he's been in that role anyway, but I think he showed last year that he can still play extremely well with Carlo, and I think it would be a really good impact on Brandon Carlo to be back with Zdeno Chara. I think part of the reason that he struggled this year at times is because he has been without Chara, and you know, some of it's because he's been with Torrey Krug, and I think he takes on a much more of a defensive role, not really taking many offensive risks and not really sort of pushing the envelope because he wants to stay back and be sort of the safe guy on the last line of defense there when Krug is out there because, you know, he's a high-risk, aggressive player. So, you know, I think that's been difficult for him at times this year, and I think being back with Charo would be really good for him. But, look, there's no question about it. It's a significant injury, which we don't know, to Charlie McAvoy. If he misses a long period of time or, you know, if this is, like, a potential season ender, like, which I said, we have no idea.
Jesus, Joe. I mean, you're kind of hopping in. I mean,
I'm just saying, if it was a serious injury to McAvoy, that's going to have a real chilling effect on, you know, the Bruins' chances in the playoffs here.
Well, I would say so, really, but let's give this some time to breathe a little bit. I mean, now you're saying the season ender. Okay, so you saw, so you're...
It's a possibility, Fred. I mean, we're not going to discount possibilities here, right? It could be a tweak or a hyperextension, and he's back really quickly, or he's even on the, you know, practice ice really fast. But the other end of the spectrum, you got to take into account, too, where it could be something serious.
Okay, let's just get back to it, because I obviously haven't rewatched everything, and I was barely paying attention when it happened. But so when you look at the shift in its entirety, it looks to you that it's a knee.
It looked like it could have been a knee where there was no contact.
Yeah, yeah, those are the worst.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, it looked like, it's tough to tell because we're not doctors, right? We're just breaking down what we think we see on video. But if it's an incident where he just went down with no contact around him and it just kind of gave out on him by the boards and he fell awkwardly and then he got up, tried to play, and immediately fell down again and couldn't put weight on it and then went off the ice. I mean, you can read into that what you will, but it didn't really look good when you were watching the video. And like I said, the fact that they came back pretty quickly afterwards and said, you know, he's not coming back within minutes after it happened, that is also not a good sign. So you hope for the best, but like I said, if you've got to hope for the best and sort of plan for the worst. That's my life philosophy, so I'm certainly going to take that approach in something like this where, like I said, if it is a serious injury, he's such a workhorse, they're expecting to throw everything on him. If it were something that were put him out for a significant amount of time, that would have a real chilling effect on the Bruins' hopes of going on a deep run and you know, winning the Cup. And it would come down to Zdeno Chara at 41 years old doing a lot of different things and being forced into a lot of different roles in the playoffs, which would be a real challenge for the Bruins, no question.
All right, so McQuaid has been, I think, a healthy scratch in three of the last four games. He's going to come back. How is he handling being on the ninth floor?
Well, I think it's difficult. You know, I think he's a prideful guy. He's a competitor. He's a Stanley Cup champion. You know, he's been one of the longest tenured guys on the team, and he's a guy you want to have out there because he's so tough and he's so conscientious as far as standing up for teammates. And you know, he's a battler and a warrior in the defensive zone and block shots and do everything you need him to do. So, you know, it's been hard for him, I think, to sort of reconcile with the fact that he's not playing late in the year like this and the fact that he's usually when he's out of the lineup like this, it's because he's not healthy and because he's been injured in the past. And, you know, now to be fully healthy and not playing, that's going to be difficult for anybody that's a professional athlete. But by the same token, Adam McQuaid is an excellent person. He's an excellent player. He's an excellent team guy. And I think he understands what's going on here. There are going to be good players from now, from the trade deadline on with the Bruins that are not going to be playing on a nightly basis because Don Sweeney went out and got real qualified good players at every single position
center wing and on defense to give them depth in case injuries happen, and to give, you know, veteran players roles where if some young guys that they have in the lineup, you know, kind of sputter or struggle down the stretch or in the playoffs, you have a veteran guy that can step in immediately and do a really good job, as we've seen from Tommy Wingles, Brian Johnta, and Nick Holden as well, who I thought played extremely well the other night, 22 minutes and assist, and has looked like a really good passer from the point position. So, you know, I think it's tough for Adam McQuaid, but I think he understands it, and, you know, he's going to be breathing fire when he gets back on the ice and gets a chance to get back in there.
All right, any idea when we'll hear about McAvoy?
Well, we'll hear something today. The Bruins are practicing at 11:30, something like that, at the Garden. Team picture day, Fred, so if you want to swing by and get some selfies with the team, swing by the Garden after the show. But
I think Sarge is going in for that.
Hey, what, do you need a photographer?
Real quick, Hex, I'm a little worried about Tuca. You know, 3 goals on those first 6 shots he faced the other night. What's his workload going to be here in the next handful of games?
Yeah, well, he's going to be back in Tuesday against Detroit and get right back on the horse. And, you know, Bruce Cassidy said over the weekend that he's nursing something very, very minor. So you may see a time or two in the near future where you would expect him to play. And maybe he doesn't if they're trying to get him back to 100%. And maybe Hudobin comes in and plays. I mean, Hudobin's been so good all year. This is the best NHL season he's ever had. And he's been exactly what the Bruins needed as a backup, a guy that could push Tuca, a guy that could give Tuca sufficient rest to be, you know, fresh and close to 100% down the stretch as far as playing time goes, you know, that you could give him another shot or two and not shy away from it if you need to play him because of a minor injury. But, you know, Tuca Rask, last 6 games, .888 save percentage, has given up 3 goals or more in 4 of the last 6. It's not just that game against Pittsburgh where he did look rough in the first period. It's been a few games lately, so you know, maybe he does you know, sit a little bit more than normal in the next week or two to try to get his game back to where it was when, you know, December and January he was the best goalie in the NHL, because they need that guy down the stretch and going into the playoffs.
All right, Joe Haggerty, the man of doom. from NBC
Grim Reaper, Freddie T.
That's right, the NBC Sports Boston. Thank you so much, sir.
You got it, boys.
All right, we appreciate it. Hardy has conceived a game, and we will play such game in a matter of moments.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Hardy is in for Rich. The Oscars were last night, a celebration of many things I did not see. But I did see Get Out. And I did, and I might have seen something else. I didn't see that damn fish movie.
The Shape of Water. I'm in love with a fish.
I know. I had an opportunity to see 3 Billboards, but I didn't have the patience. I made my kid watch Miracle so he would try harder at everything.
The patience for what? It's a movie. You know the patience for a movie?
It depends how medicated I am.
Mm. Well, Fred, the best picture winner last night, we know, was Shape of Water.
You know what I did see is I saw that Lady Bird.
Did you?
I did.
How
I saw it in the theater.
How was it?
It was the definition of fine. Like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was fine. Okay. I mean, it existed.
Yes.
I don't know why it was considered this, like, breakthrough movie. But I was surprised that the woman who did it was very attractive, the writer and director.
Oh, I did see her last night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
You didn't think she would be attractive?
No.
Why?
That she'd be one of these bookish dames.
Well, sometimes you take those glasses off.
Well, that was the whole thing with those 90s and 80s films, is you could never tell the girl was hot because she had her hair up in glasses.
Well, you take the hair out of the bun.
Yeah.
And then take the glasses off.
Because all it takes, if you know you're ugly, if all it takes is to take your hair out of a bun and take off your glasses to become beautiful. What was the worst one of those? It might have Freddie Prinze Jr. in it. Oh, who was the, She's All That.
Okay.
Because the whole time you're like, this girl's hot.
Yeah.
Like, she's good looking.
Yeah.
Like, you know, women have bodies that you can see. Like, you know.
Better looking than the girlfriend he had at the beginning of the movie.
Well, that's always how it is.
Yeah.
That's how it is in this day and age.
Lainey Boggs, huh? How about that?
Who's Lainey Boggs?
That's the character you're talking about from She's All That.
Seems like John spent a lot of evenings with She's All That.
Well, we're gonna investigate how much John knows about a couple of things here.
Okay,
that movie is not one of the choices. I don't think I'm giving anything away, but since nobody saw Shape of Water.
No.
We're going to go back over the last, going back to 2010. So I'll give you the time frame. I'm going to play you the first 20 seconds of the trailer of each Best Picture winner going back for the last 7-8 years.
Okay.
See if you can figure out what the movie is.
All right.
Okay?
Yes.
All right. We begin with this.
Actions of Iran have shocked the civilized world.
Get everything.
Our embassy has been seized and more than 60 American citizens continue to be held as hostages.
If we're going to go, then we need to go now.
I got this one.
Snow White. let me kick it around. So that's obviously Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter, and he's talking about a hostage situation.
This one, Best Picture.
So yep. I'm guessing this is around that Olympics.
I'm going...
I'm guessing it's around that war. Is a war? Is it set on the gas stations? Is it about a peanut farm? Is it about having an idiot brother with a brand of beer?
That's it. The name of the movie was Billy Beer, and it won Best Picture in 2013. No.
Well, am I right about Jimmy Carter?
Yes, it's Jimmy. You identified a voice in it. What's the movie?
I say Argo.
That is correct. Argo is the
film. I didn't see that. I don't care for
I saw Argo. That's the one I've seen in the last 5-6 years.
It's propaganda.
I saw Argo.
I don't care for that anti-U.S. propaganda.
See if you can name this Best Picture from recent years.
How did we end up here? This place is horrible. Smells like balls. We had it all. You were a movie star, remember?
Who was this guy used to be?
Oh, that. Oh, boy. Daddy's Home?
Last Man Standing, Bruce Willis.
All right, so listen. Okay, let me get this right. So
Christopher Walken is the bad guy. No, great.
There's a gruff prospector.
Yes.
And he moves into a place that smells bad.
Right. Think Gold Rush, San Francisco.
Okay.
You're there. You're getting there.
All right. So it's a gruff. He is a prospector. Is he a farmer?
The movie is Birdman.
Oh,
I saw that movie.
Wallach should have got that.
Wait a second.
I know.
You should have said it's a movie about a gap tooth update guy. Hey, I saw Birdman. Play that trailer. That's the trailer?
That is the trailer for Birdman. You want to hear it again?
It had such a satisfying ending.
I thought the whole movie was so satisfying.
Yeah. It wasn't about like...
Stupid.
Yeah, it wasn't like, hey, movies.
How did we end up here? This place is horrible.
Who is that?
It's the voice of Birdman, I think, in Michael Keaton's head.
All right, okay. I saw Birdman.
All right, so did I.
I mean, there was no The Falconer.
Let's see if you boys can name this recent Best Picture winner.
War with Germany will come, and we will need a king who we can all stand behind.
He's afraid of his own shadow.
Is that Stutterer Face?
Stutterer Face? Can he come up with the name? It's not Stutterer Face.
Is it, get it? Come on, get it out.
Spit it out already.
All right, it's about, I didn't see this one, but I know it's about a stutterer.
Yes.
And he's a king.
Yep. You got it, Wallach?
I think I do, yes.
Okay. It's called, hey, there's hope. All right, his name, it's called The King.
Mm-hmm. King can't talk so good.
The king.
No,
it's called. What's that? All right. It's about a king that stutters.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
What do kings do?
They rule.
And they make
swords.
They
speech. Oh, the king's speech.
Yay!
Yeah. There we go.
That's Freddy
Double
T.
Entendre.
Yeah. That works two ways.
You want to do one more?
I'll do dang 15 of these.
Now I'm on a roll.
Now I'm kicking ass.
After I nailed spit it out already, sire.
All right, what is this?
Oh, God. How can you not get this? What do people do when they hear this music, Fred? Put a gun in their mouth? No. They usually do it in this movie on top of automobiles.
Jump through the windshield?
No.
Throw themselves onto the street?
That's what you felt like doing after watching this movie.
I have a feeling I know what it is.
Yes.
It's called You Couldn't Pay Me to Go. it's called La La Land.
La La Land did not win Best Picture.
Well, we thought they did, but they didn't.
It's called, The Time of Cholera. It's like, Not So Fast, Boogie Boy.
You know, I saw this movie, and I'm pretty sure that this fits the tone of the movie perfectly. It's The English Patient. It's got that kind of feel to it.
Okay. My left foot.
No.
And it's just about a guy with two left
feet. There's no speaking in the trailer.
Oh.
Because there's no speaking in the movie. There's your hint.
Okay.
Well, then how the hell... You saw this?
No. God, no. But it won Best Picture in 2011.
And there's no speaking.
I don't think so.
And
Dan O'Brien, any talking in that movie?
And they allowed this to happen.
I don't think so, but I didn't see it.
Anybody?
What, are they just dancing around?
I don't know if there's dancing in it. It's black and white. It's
called Cutting a Rug?
It's a silent film.
Is it called Tripping the Light Fantastic?
No, it is The Artist. Best Picture.
Who the hell knows what that is?
All right, so you guys failed miserably. You got the King Don't Talk So Good, but that's it.
Don't get Argo.
Spit it out,
sorry. You got Argo.
You got Argo.
Yes.
All right, good.
All right.
There we go.